Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Our home and lifestyle tips correspondent. Today, it's all about science, I believe. Therese, are you there?
A little bit of contact over and out.
Absolutely. Wonderful. So, yes, we're very excited about science because it's Science Week. Tell me all about it.
It's great stuff, really.
Yes.
Science. Do you
know? Sure, it's very good. Yeah. It's, what would you do without your weird science? You've been checking out, first of all, a website. The website, is this your website of the week or is it just...
It is my website of the week, sci-fi.ie, and Science Week is all over it. And it's just amazing the range of things that people can go to this week for all ages, for children, online, offline, go in, visit places, do things. In Cavan, Monaghan, Cork, Carlow, Galway, Kerry, Limerick, Sligo, Tipperary, Wexford. There's something happening in all over the country. So it's not Dublin or university-based or college-based. There's things happening everywhere. There's one in Chagask in Meath. How to save the planet in 45 minutes. I like that.
Brilliant. It's a really good little title, isn't it? It's a catchy title. So how to save the planet in 45 minutes. Is this an event?
It is an event in Chagask, in the Chagask Centre. There's another one called I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here. Now, that's online. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Because students can connect with science and scientists and talk online. And there's a competition between the scientists and the students are the judges. And so there's a prize and everything. So they've got to ask their questions to the scientists. And the favourite scientist wins the prize. But really, the range of diversity, everything from insects to the sky at night. So it's not just all about chemicals or machines or robots or AI.
Yeah.
You know, it's brilliant, Ronan.
Really good. And that's all happening this week. Because it is Science Week this week. Great. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get to that. And as I said, particularly How to Save the Planet in 45 Minutes and I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here sound really, really good. Like a lot of fun. So what's out there?
Sugar war. There's science for you.
Oh, sugar
addiction
war.
Of sugar. That's what I call it, the sugar war. It's this whole chocolate and biscuits and drinks and the price competition that's gone on between the supermarkets. And all I can say is resist, listeners, resist.
Yes, very good. Yeah, do you know what? We've actually had this. Even speaking to Alex Dobbs there, the last
that's
couple of
right.
our nutritionist the other day going, you know what? Just because they pile on a load of biscuits, as we said last week, you know, they're actually best before, about 3 weeks before Christmas. So they have no intention of them lasting through Christmas. The whole idea is that they're going to be eaten well in advance of Christmas, and it's just an excuse to shove a Christmas thing on the front. It's not to be shoved upstairs and stored. It's not about that at all.
No, and I heard your nutritionist talk about all that, and it was very good. But what is out there that's good is Lidl have ski wear. But in the middle of the ski wear, they have these wonderful waterproof boots that are very popular with parents for children during the winter.
Okay.
I saw them, I felt them, they look lovely and they're warm too. So that's an interesting catch out there this week.
Excellent.
And also Dunn's. I mean, you know I love Dunn's as an Irish company.
Yeah, it's fabulous, yeah.
But they have amazing Irish-made candles across all their ranges. Considered, Paul Costello, their own ones. And that's amazing that they're actually able to buy something and sell it onwards for a profit, an Irish company making beautiful... I mean, they're beautiful candles, Roland.
Absolutely.
They really are.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, we go through absolutely mad amounts of candles in our house. And it's funny, you know, because both myself and Joanne are therapists now, so we often use the little candle in the room, just kind of your little reference, you know. Kind of there it is, a little candle just to light up the darkness, you know.
Yeah.
And you know what? There is something so beautiful about the light that is created by a candle. It's so
absolutely
lovely, you know, and particularly
gentle,
this day. Yeah.
It's waving, it's small, but it's constant. It's there. It's a lovely light. And I bought one, a ginger one. And you're the foodie that you are, Ronan.
Yeah, absolutely.
A ginger candle in the considered range in Dunn. So that's something that's out there as an alternative.
Wow. And did it smell? Did it create a nice smell in the room?
It's lovely. If you like ginger, if you like the warmth that offers, you know, it's
absolutely
lovely. But what's out there also, are all the supermarkets have a lot of magazines, and sometimes they have lovely recipes. But if you're thinking of trying something different for your maybe first time Christmas dinner, please test it and trial it first.
Oh, very good.
If you can.
Yeah.
Don't make the mistakes of doing it last minute and it not working out and
fancy
stuffing with dried avocado wrapped in organic Swedish pineapple skins.
Yes.
Might sound lovely, but taste awful. And when you race out to get the fair trade smoked garlic, do you know that essential to the recipe. Everyone's been trying it and it's not there. I say keep it simple and get it right and it's perfect. It's enough.
And would you say a trial run a week before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas just to make sure that you can do it and there's nothing really tricky in the recipe? Is that that's what you'd recommend?
2 weeks, yeah. Try it on everyone first. Absolutely. The small things, but keep it simple.
Yes, exactly. I can just imagine the kids going, no, I don't want any more dried avocado and Swedish pineapple skins, ma. No, I hate it.
The smell of it.
So what's the job of the week, Trace?
Oh, if you only saw me yesterday, bring in those tender plants or wrap them up in your fleeces if you have to.
Right.
And today's a lovely day. It's a dry day and it's a day for cutting back the roses so they won't get rocked in the wind or trimming things. Not like me, 2 minutes before the rain comes and I'm trimming my fingers, not the bay tree yesterday, you know.
Oh, that was ferocious, ferocious and cold, you know.
So get it done today while it's dry. And please plant those bulbs. It's not too late. You can still plant six little bulbs. Going until December if you want.
And can I just ask you, what would you define as being tender plants?
Dahlias. They need to get complicated. And I start putting them into pots.
Okay.
And I bring the pots in rather than digging them up and drying them and dusting them.
So tell us, would that cause problems when you're inside, you know, like for instance, you know, they've been out and it's been cold enough. Like, I mean, you're talking, you know, 6 to 8 degrees. Now, okay, you want to avoid the kind of zero or minus zero for them. That's fine. But putting them into the house at 20 degrees, is that not going to cause problems?
Glass house.
Okay.
The shed.
Okay,
or the garage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
That's where I'm bringing them in. And I brought fuchsia in as well yesterday.
Okay.
Because they're in pots. I've started putting things into pots. They're easier to manage.
Very good.
And what I do is I have my ceramic pots and I drop my summer plants into them. I take out the plastic pots with the dahlias, the fuchsias, the freesias and all the hostas, and I put in pots with bulbs instead.
Oh, wow. That's really
much
good.
Much easier.
Trace. Yeah, that's really
it's
good.
It's proper pot gardening.
Absolutely. So that's the kind of the gardening end of the job of the week done. So can I just... you had a little mention there you wanted to talk about wrapping up warm.
Yes. Seemingly as a nation, we're very bad about wrapping up, wearing hats and scarves. I don't know why, but someone has done research on this. So please this year, buy yourself a proper hat and a proper set of gloves and a scarf and wear them. And if you're buying the beanie hat and gloves for the shoebox appeal and pennies, as I keep saying, please buy an extra set and put it in the car boot. Essential. You never know when you use them. I had to jumpstart my battery last night and my hat and my fingerless gloves were well used. I was so thankful for them in the cold wind of the darkness last night in Sligo. So please buy a set for yourself and put them in the boot.
Yeah, you'd want to see them up our way now. There's a kind of a hardiness, and I'm not convinced, but it's kind of like you see the lads, you know, like there, it'll be -3 outside, there'll be snow on the ground, the lads going out in their T-shirts, and you're like going, what's going on here? And like here you are, they're looking at you going like, yeah, big softy, yeah, big soft, yeah, big wuss from the suburbs, what's wrong with you? And then their kids are going out to school, and like, I'm going, those kids don't have any clothes, they don't even have coats on them. What's wrong with them? And it's just like, it's their way of going, yeah, don't know, we are born.
Toughen this one out, so we will toughen it out, toughen myself up with a bit of hard weather.
Now, I love this little thing, 11 other uses for apples.
Yeah, it's a while since I did this one.
Yeah. But,
and don't be laughing by number 7. These are good.
Okay, go for us.
Bitter taste in your mouth, bad taste in your mouth.
Yes.
Gunks, things stuck in your teeth. Yeah. Chew an apple.
Oh, very good. That was the classic
natural
thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Cleaner.
I remember they used to say to us, and if you can't get to a toothbrush, chew an apple and it'll do the job for you. That's very good.
Well, yeah, I'd never heard that before. Yeah. Obviously, you had. I'd never heard that before. If you chew an apple, it increases saliva production and it's easier to clean or to move the things, and it actually removes stains from your teeth. So I never heard of that. Stop a headache.
Oh.
Sniff a green apple.
Oh, I never knew that. So is that about rehydrating, or what do you think it's about?
No, it's about scent. It's just purely about a fresh, clean scent.
Oh.
Cutting an apple in half, and it seems to work very fast, and it can relieve the headache, just sniffing the apple.
Gosh, brilliant.
Very, very simple.
Yeah.
Using an apple as a stamp, cutting shapes out on it, Dipping it in ink and into paint, and it's just an activity for the children, particularly if you've loads of apples in your garden and they're knocking around wasted.
Yeah.
You can cut the top off them and then create an image
Pretty much like you would do with a potato print, except you're using an apple instead of the potato. That's a really good idea.
Absolutely.
Now, this is a new one on
green
me.
Tomatoes.
That's a new one on me, absolutely. So if you have green tomatoes, and you know that does happen in Ireland where you've got your tomatoes to a certain point. So tell me, what does the apple do?
It releases chemicals into your bag where you're holding your green tomatoes with
Brilliant.
Your one little apple,
yeah.
And it accelerates their ripening. And tomatoes were very late. We still have green tomatoes in the glass house. I picked two yesterday. Two red tomatoes yesterday in November. It's unbelievable, and a raspberry.
Yeah.
But if you want to ripen your green tomatoes, dead simple way to do it. And even if you don't, you know, you're bringing them home from the shop and they're a bit hard, and you like a softer tomato, can do this as well with them.
Never knew. Well, there you go. There's Science Week for you there now. Absolutely. Put the old bit of the green apple in with the green tomatoes and it ripens them. So what about the brown sugar?
It's hard and you might be baking this weather.
Yeah.
Put an apple wedge into the bag of sugar, seal it up in a bag, and it will release a softening kind of sense into the sugar and loosen it up. It does the exact same thing with a cake. If you have cakes and someone brought you a cake and you're not going to eat it in 2 days, it's going to be there for the rest of the week as you take a bit every day. Put half an apple into the cake tin and it'll keep the cake from going hard. Same thing, releases something that softens the air. Does the exact same with a chicken. What do you stuff your chickens with?
Usually onions and lemons.
Lemons are great, and an orange is lovely as well, and a big chunk of herbs. But you can also stuff chopped up apple.
Wow, that makes sense.
It does, and it keeps the chicken tender just as much as the others add flavour. The chicken, the apple will keep it tender. The juices of the apple will ooze out and keep it tender. I liked this one. This is a real science one. You've heard of dropping a potato into a soup or stew if you put too much salt in. That works. You can do the same with an apple.
Wow. So if you have, like, say you've just done way too much salt in it, you put an apple in and it neutralises the salt. Is that what it does?
Absorbs the salt.
Wow.
Whatever chemicals or other powerful things.
Wow.
And then you leave it in for 10 minutes and then you take out the wedge. You don't leave it in. You have to take it out.
Very good.
The salt out. Because the potato sometimes dilutes the stew or the soup and breaks up and kind of thickens it out. But the apple seemingly pluck out the chunk of apple and takes the apple with it.
It attracts the salt away. That's brilliant. I'm definitely remembering that. That's definitely a good one.
Getting rid of your oil in your hair, teaspoon of cider vinegar into your water, and the final rinse after your shampoo and conditioner.
And then the lovely smell of vinegar off your hair when you're finished as well. I can just imagine it.
Did you see I got the word in? Did you see I got my favourite chemical in there?
It disappears.
I keep telling you, the smell disappears. It kind of removes the soap residue or anything kind of residue that makes the oil or grease in your hair. Very simple.
Okay.
And a mini facial. But if you're going to do this one, please patch test.
Yes.
Grate your apple and put it on your skin. It's the same whenever we recommend any of our, down through the years we've had some strange combinations.
That's right.
Haven't we had, Ronan?
That's
that you
right.
put on your face.
Why is Ma purple? Well, she was just rubbing apples all over her head.
No, leave it at that. And the last one then is using candles as candlesticks.
Oh yeah, just like put one into the. Oh, that's very cute. Like you get little tea lights, those little votive candles, and you can put them. That's very cute.
And I sent you a lovely picture. They're absolutely gorgeous.
That's really cute.
Can you imagine a line of them across the mantelpiece? Wouldn't it be just gorgeous?
Absolutely lovely, right? Like stuck into the top of the apple. So I suppose you could say like the wick of the candle is a little bit like the stick that would be coming out of the top of the apple. That is really cute.
Absolutely
brilliant. Great
so on that light note.
Indeed. Oh, I see what you did there. Okay, Trace, thanks a million. God bless you. We talk to you again next week. See you. Thanks for
all your...
Details of a long-awaited auto-enrolment pension scheme for those who would only have the state pension to rely on in old age have been announced. But what does this mean? I mean, who's it good for? and how will it impact on young people's finances? On the line now to tell us more, we have John Lowe from Money Doctors. You are very welcome to the show, John. How are you?
Thank you, Rowan. Very well indeed.
Well, first of all, John, what are your initial impressions in terms of the proposals for the auto-enrollment scheme?
Well, first of all, it's long, long outstanding. I mean, it's actually ridiculous. We're talking about auto-enrollment, 20 years ago. Sure. Let me just put it into perspective. You know, at the moment, we have 677,000 people over the age of 66. In 30 years' time, we'll have 1.8 million.
Whoa.
Last year, for everybody who retired, there were five workers. In 30 years, there'll be less than two.
Right.
So it doesn't take a mathematical genius to work out. The government simply won't have the money to pay for the 1.8 million pensions, state pensions every week, which currently is €248.30. So where is this coming from? And the only way they can do it is either reduce the state pension or abolish it.
Sure.
Or start an auto-enrollment kind of plan whereby employers are forced to take out a pension on behalf of their employees and actually pay into it. Currently, there's something in there at the moment, which is if you're a company, you are by law required to set up a direct debit system so that employees can take money from their salaries directly into a pension fund. You have to nominate an insurance company, but you don't have to put anything into it. So
okay.
if you haven't done that, you could be fined up to 15,000, believe
okay.
it or not. And there's quite a lot of companies out there who haven't done that even.
Right.
And that's not putting anything in. But within 3 years, 2022, this new auto-enrollment legislation is going to come into practice.
So, John, the way you're describing it, the onus is definitely on the employer rather than the employee. Is that
yeah.
what you're saying?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And how does that work for self-employed people?
Well, self-employed, I mean, will still have the option. They won't be forced.
Okay.
They can't obviously force themselves. But,
sure.
I mean, it makes sense.
Of course,
you know,
it does. Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Believe it or not, Ronan, the pension is probably the best investment you could actually get into today.
Right.
I mean, you think about it. Even if you're on the 20% tax rate, for every 100 euros you're putting into a pension, the government are going to give you back 20 euros. So that means you're up 20% before you start.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now
yeah.
add in the mix of, you know, we're now in the 26th bull market. The bull market is when you have a little crash, which we had like 10 years ago, and the next day it goes up and it keeps going up. So we're in the 10th year, the second longest bull market, and we've had 26 of them. We've had 25 bears, and for the bull to become a bear, it has to drop 20%. So this year alone, we're probably up about maybe 8-9%, you know, in terms of growth. And that growth in a pension fund is tax-free. So add your 20% to the 9%, you've now got 29% growth in 1 year. I defy you to name one other investment that will give you that kind of return.
Yeah, like I was just noting that you know there are some banks in Europe that are actually charging you to hold on to your money. So
well, it's not just the banks in Europe. It's the credit unions in Ireland where they're putting money with AIB and Bank of Ireland, you know, from customers' funds. That's why you
yeah.
might have noticed that they've reduced it down to some credit unions to 15,000 threshold is
right.
the maximum amount you can hold in shares with your local credit union. And that's because AIB are charging 0.65% and Bank of Ireland are charging 0.4%.
To hold on to their money, whereas once upon a time they'd be giving them 3 or 4%
correct.
Interest.
I mean, the best demand rate in the country at the moment is, and this is before DIR tax, and DIR tax is still 35% until next January, but the best one grows is 0.15.
Wow. Yeah.
0.15. Put that, take the DIR tax of 35% off that, you're looking at 0.0975%.
Yeah, so the idea of a state pension, or it's not a state pension, but of a pension fund, and you're also getting a huge tax break on it as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes
now,
sense.
The tax breaks, by the way, they have a threshold and based on your age. So up to the age of 30, you can put 15%. From 30 to 40, it's 20. Over 40 is 25. It goes over 50, 30%.
Wow.
And at 60, actually, it's 40%. But I had one young 26-year-old girl in with me a couple of weeks back, and actually a couple of months back, and she was visibly upset when she learned that she had missed out on 2 years' pension contributions.
Yeah. Well, that really says a lot, doesn't it? You know, there's some conscientious people out there who really don't want to make it work for themselves, which is great.
Well, that is one of the main problems with this auto-enrollment. And the problem has been that, number one, IBEC, the employer union, they don't want to bring in a pension fund because it means that their employers are going to have to pay money. Yeah. The unions like SIPTU, they don't want to do it either because it means that their members don't want to actually start putting money away for something else in the future when they need the money now.
Yeah.
And then you've got the politician who's right in the middle, and all they want are votes to be re-elected. So if there's an ambivalence between the employer and the employee about setting this up, they're as happy to be as ambivalent about it as well.
Yeah. So the way you're telling me, John, it sounds like even though this seems like a no-brainer, actually because of the way it's falling, it's quite a hard sell because everybody has a reason for not really pushing it.
It's a very, very hard sell, and that's why it's taken. I mean, they've been speaking about auto-enrollment for at least 20 years.
I know. So absolutely.
And like this came in like 3-4 years ago when it was first mooted again to, and now it's starting to gather momentum, but they still haven't finalized as to what percentage the employer is going to put in and what percentage the employee. They're talking about a mix of 6%, maybe 3% each, or maybe 4% for the employer, 2% for the employee, but that should be all sorted and finalized at this stage.
Sure.
And there's an option as well for the employee to opt out after 1 year or 2 years or 18 months. That hasn't been finalized either, which also seems madness to allow an employee to start a scheme and then opt out.
Yeah, I take your point. Absolutely, yeah. You're talking about the employers having a certain contribution and the employee having a certain contribution. Does that mean the government would have a contribution as well?
No. Well, the government is. Sorry, beg your pardon. Of course. Yeah. The government is giving you back all that tax.
Okay.
If you're on the 40%, you're getting that back.
So that's their contribution.
Their contribution, So as I say, especially if you're on the higher rate of tax, I mean, it will mean, for instance, your own radio station, Spirit Radio Station, may have to bring in a pension fund. Now, it will. Yes. For anybody who's part-time or considered part-time, they may be precluded. Also, if you're under 23 and over 80, you may also opt out, or the employer may opt out of funding such a scheme.
I understand, yeah.
So, again, what you have to do, as I say, is just make sure that you're in a pension scheme. That's the primary thing,
So, I mean, the pros are very clear. Do you see any cons with this particular scheme?
The only cons, again, is down to affordability. And I keep saying it to people that it's all very well for me to say if you're on, 50,000 and you are, 41 years of age, then you can put 25% of your net relevant earnings. So if it's 50,000, it's 12,500 you can put away, and you can to maximize the tax relief available to you. However, 12,500, even if you're getting back 40% back, is still a lot of money, and that's why you really need to do a budget to make sure that you can actually afford it.
And yeah, like I take that idea of, I suppose, I'm picturing somebody maybe in their 30s who probably should be putting something aside, and yet their priority is to get enough money together to maybe get a mortgage, for instance.
That's it. But, I mean, it's extremely difficult. You've got lots of pressures on the monies that you're earning, between rent, and if you are renting the rent at the moment, I have a daughter who's paying $1,100 a month for a room in a two-bedroom property. Huge amount of money, and to be able to save on top of that and then start thinking about a pension, it's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. But thank you, John Lowe from Money Doctors. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
It'll be a pleasure. Good morning,
God bless you. We talk to you soon. Bye. Now, there's an upcoming series of seminars taking place in Galway, hosted by the Jesuit Centre, that will look at topics relating to church and faith in our contemporary culture. Our next guest is leading those seminars, titled Faith in Your Future. And on the line to tell us more, we have Father Michael Conway. You're very welcome to the show, Father Michael.
Thank you, Ronan. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. First of all, Michael, in planning out this seminar series, what did you feel it was important to address in terms of topics and themes?
I think what I was most attentive to is that, let's say, over the last 20 years or so, in the general Irish landscape, that the relationship between, if you like, the formal institutional church and the life of faith, they no longer overlap and are tightly knit together as they in the past. So we've got huge diversity around the life of faith per se.
Yeah.
And I wanted to explore that, what that's like. What's that like to search out a life of faith where your connection to the institutional church may not be as strong as for earlier generations? And how does one honor, if you like, that more general life of faith that's alive in every person, I believe.
Yeah, so I mean, clearly we're talking specifically about people who are coming from a kind of a Catholic paradigm very much, but in a way faith.
I wouldn't actually see it that way. I think everybody has a life of faith.
Oh, no. I think you miss me, you mishear me. What I mean is when you talk about the institutional church, you're not talking about other institutional churches in the sense that...
Well, yes, I am. I'm talking
about... Okay, well, elaborate then, Michael.
Yes, yeah. That if you like, the way we've structured faith life in our various Christian denominations, even the way we structure our social life, our cultural life, that has radically changed over the last 20 years or so. And the fact that this structuring, the institutions, don't seem to function as they did, say, 50 years ago, it's raising all kinds of interesting questions for those of us who search to live by the gospel, to preach the gospel in a changed environment. And that's really what I'd like to try and tease out and think about a bit.
So is it the sense that in past generations that there was to do faith was pretty much synonymous with doing church?
Exactly.
Yeah. So in a way, what we have is we have these new expressions or new, you know, and I suppose in many ways they're quite experiential experiences of faith that may or may not have happened within the context of, you know, a church even. It might have happened in the church. It might have happened out in the field somewhere. And is your sense that the church is in some way trying to catch up with those experiences, or do you think there's something else going on?
I don't think it's catching up. I think that in terms of the institutional churches, that the way that we have structured life, the way that we gather people together, the way we celebrate with people, all of that has to move with the very culture within which we are embedded.
Sure.
We have no choice.
Absolutely.
And the question is, how exactly, what directions do we move in? How do we do that? What are the kind of principles that we need to follow? And how do we make sure that we honor people who, may in one way of, in one system, may appear to be marginal, but actually may be very important in terms of the life of the Christian churches?
Yeah, and I know exactly what you mean, because who is calling that person marginal? You know, it's where,
yes, it's relative,
where, yeah,
of course.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's the idea that somebody from a particular standpoint is basically referring to that as person as marginal, and yet they may be representative of a lot of people.
Not only that, but you're in a way, in your own life, you're never marginal.
Of course.
Your own faith
absolutely.
Life is actually is not ever a marginalized experience. It's the journey that you're on, and how you seek to live out that in communion with others, and you know, that kind of dynamic. So in a sense, there's nobody's marginal.
No, indeed.
If you look at it from that person-centered approach, as it were.
Absolutely, and you want to validate everybody's personal experience without a doubt. So why these questions, and why in particular, why now, do you think?
Because I teach, and from my work with students, one of the probably the most common thing I hear from students is that they use this phrase, I'm a spiritual person, but I don't wish to have any connection with religion.
I've heard that many times myself.
You've heard that many times, and we've all heard it.
Yeah.
And that to me is a really interesting phenomenon, because it says that the life of faith is fully alive in our culture, but that the connection to what's perceived to be religion has broken down or is breaking down very seriously. And we have to think about that and see what that's saying, because I think that in time, when we look back at the 20th century, it's there's a great tragedy behind that particular reality.
Mm.
That somehow there's a richness of the life of faith that people acknowledge and have no difficulty in voicing, but they do not feel that the, if you like, that the institutional church or religion in that sense is able to accompany them. It's a place where they can be in terms of honoring that. That voice of that they call the voice of spirituality.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really, really serious, serious issue to think about.
It's almost like there's been almost like a breakdown in trust, as it were, you know?
Yes, definitely. That is definitely in there. I have no doubt about that. And I'm sure there are all kinds of various dynamics in the background. Fear, and as I say, in a way, personal dynamics that go some way to, as it were, help understand this phenomenon.
So, I mean, we're not trying to fix the world or anything here, but do you have any kind of intuition or hunch as to how this might be resolved, or is it even desirable to resolve it?
Yes, I don't see that as anything that's to be resolved. I see it as something that calls for a new way of responding in terms of how the church is embedded in the culture and how it is shaped by the culture and how the culture is shaped by it. That's how I see that dynamic. So to me, it calls us to new responsibilities, to new ways of proclaiming the gospel, and there you already get hints of some of the directions we need to go in, I think, in the culture. And that's what I'd like to think a bit about.
Absolutely. For some who have been discouraged during events and legislation over the past number of years, including the Eighth Amendment, is this a good opportunity to be encouraged?
I'm not sure I understand the question in the sense that...
Well, you know, we often hear, you know, everything's kind of all gloom and doom, you know, and that, but is our faith inviting us instead to embrace new signs of life?
There's no life without death.
Yeah.
There's no moving forward without letting go. There's no... It's the greatest sign of a living reality when things die.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the fact that various forms of church life, which really are forms that belong to the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
There are structures and systems that are rooted so far back that the fact that they are now coming to some kind of end, that to me is a sign of life. It's not a sign of death.
Yeah, I know.
I would see it from an entirely different perspective.
Yeah, I take your point. I'm very much a product of the charismatic renewal back in the kind of the late 70s and the early 80s, you know, as a child, you know, and mm-hmm. kind of in a teen. And I was always very aware that it was kind of held with a slight distrust, really, by the kind of a lot of people within the church and
course.
A lot of the hierarchies and stuff. Now, it's kind of become subsumed, and that's all fine. But I was sitting, I was in church yesterday morning, and it was a really, really, you know, a kind of a very, very bleak kind of an experience.
Because,
and I was looking at my two children who are in there, both in their teens now, at the age that I was coming into this glorious experience of God, and I was almost weeping for them to go, I wish they could have the experience that I had, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our culture has gone very experiential in the way it engages with communal activity. And I mean, if you have a form of liturgy that isn't able to honor that kind of experiential dynamic, it's going to be very difficult, as it were, to meet people
yeah.
and to form community in that kind of a register.
Yeah, no, I take your point. We're really here, and I'm just fascinating talking to you, Michael, but I do want to make sure that we get to plug this series of talks
right.
as well. So what can people expect from the series that you're doing in the Jesuit Centre in Galway?
I would hope that I would open up some questions, and that those questions would open up other horizons and other ways of looking at things for anybody who would come to the talks.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't see my job as trying to, I think it would be naive anyways, as kind of giving any kind of solution or resolution.
Sure, yeah.
But I would hope places that maybe people hadn't looked
yeah.
and that didn't realize are worth looking at. I hope that I might open up some of those horizons.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt, but opening up the question in itself is a powerful thing to do for people, because it really, because sometimes the asking of the question, it gets people stop assuming.
Yes,
you
exactly.
know, which is great.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'd agree totally with you on that one, Ronan, that that you can almost bring yourself down a narrow street and not see that the landscape is much, much bigger than the street you're on.
Yeah. Exactly. So Wednesday, 13th of November, Finding and Honouring Your Faith in Contemporary Culture. Wednesday, the 20th of November, Beyond Power, Church and Faith in Future. These are really powerful kind of big, big topics, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I realise that I think I'm 2 days' time, I'm starting the first one. And as I just drawing up my notes for it, I just realized, oh,
this is a biggie.
It's probably bigger than I had realized. But I mean, we'll do whatever we can do, and we'll explore in terms of the. We have an hour and a half, so you know that leaves time for some input, and it leaves time for some discussion, and it leaves time for some exchange, and just hearing to how people might react to what I have to say. So in that sense, at least we're not pressurized in terms of the time.
So there'll be some time for conversation.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So how can people register to attend?
I think presumably the easiest way is to email. And there, if you email jesuitcentergalway@gmail.com.
Okay.
Right, they're organizing it. And if you want the Galway phone number,
yep.
It's 091-725-363.
Great. I will read them out again so that everyone definitely has that. And I believe it's €30 for the series of the two evenings.
That's
or €15
right,
yeah. Euro per night. Great. And the seminars are taking place in the Galway Bay Hotel.
In the Galway Bay Hotel in the Inish Turk Suite, to be really accurate.
Okay, very good. I'm going to actually take that down. Inish Turk Suite.
Inish Turk Suite, Galway Bay Hotel.
And that's the Wednesday the 13th and Wednesday the 20th. Do you have time for that? Do you know what time it is?
From 8 p.m. to 9.30 p.m.
To 9.30. Brilliant. Great stuff. Well, you know what? It sounds absolutely fascinating. I'm really sorry I won't be able to be there because it's the kind of thing I would be very, very interested in. But Father Michael Conway, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're very
morning.
Welcome, Mona.
Grace, God bless you. Now, the series of seminars titled Faith in Your Future, it's hosted by the Galway, it's going to be in the Galway Bay Hotel in the Inish Turk Suite, on the Wednesday the 13th and Wednesday the 20th of November at 8 p.m. And for more details and to register, www.jesuitcentregalway.ie. That's jesuitcentregalway.ie, and you can register there. 091-725-363. Thank you so much to Father Michael Conway for coming on the show. Now, our next guest is a seasoned radio broadcaster. He set up a little sideline initiative, staging summertime drive-in movies, and this has grown to such an extent that he's had to pack in the DJ job and go full-time with a business that is going from strength to strength. His Christmas program includes films like Home Alone, Elf, Polar Express, and he's also hosting in-theatre multimedia experiences featuring the Orchestra of Ireland. And we have a family pass to give away at the end of the interview, so hold on for that. In studio now to tell us more, we have Ryan O'Neill, our old friend and a friend of the show, owner and founder of Retro Drive-In Movies. You are very welcome to the show, Ryan. How are you, man?
Delighted to be here. I'm good, thanks.
First of all, Ryan, when did you first get interested in drive-in movies?
Well, do you know what? It kind of happened by accident, really. I was in America and I happened to see a few drive-in movies. A lot of them were kind of old, run-down fields, you know? They didn't bother taking the signs down, but there were a couple that were operating. There was one in Florida in particular. And I happened to have an interest in it, kind of Googled the place, and I noticed that they were showing all the retro movies, like all of the ones that, you know, you don't see in the cinema anymore. So they were kind of staying away from the new releases. So I thought there had to be something in that and there had to be a reason. So I kind of investigated a bit more and I found out that it was all down to kind of licensing and the license fees. And what happened with the drive-in scene in America was the studios just became far too expensive for them to show the new movies. So a lot of them just started going out of business. And it's probably the reason I think quite a few went out of business over there. So what happened is you've seen a resurgence in America of retro drive-in cinemas coming back.
Really?
And
I didn't know this.
And showing all the retro movies. So.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you associated with that 1950s open-top car. They would come up and they'd put the speakers on top of the car. Yeah. And of course, you know, rainy Ireland, we don't have open-top cars for the most part.
No.
So what way does it work if you're going to do it here?
So how it worked is I was kind of thinking, well, look, we have to adapt this for Ireland, and that you're right, that was the vision I had of a drive-in movie, was that you have an open top car and you have the speakers that are kind of attached to a little post beside the car and stuff. But I realised, and of course my background in radio, thought, well, there had to be a way to do it with an FM radio,
and of course,
and that's what they were doing all over the place now. So
you just tune in the radio.
You just tune in the radio.
Brilliant.
So I knew a little bit about radio anyway, so it meant that we had to go to the BAI and get a temp broadcasting license.
Course, yeah.
So licensing was the big challenge, I think, at the start, because, you know, it wasn't done really on a big scale in Ireland. Now, there were some companies that were kind of doing similar type things, but much smaller scale. And we decided, look, if we're going to do it, might as well do it big or not do it at all.
Yeah,
so the licensing was the first challenge. So we kind of had to sit down, obviously, with the BAI and say to them, look, this is what it is. In terms of broadcasting, it's very small. Like, it's only, you know, 1 watt transmitter that we use.
Yeah,
it just has to go. You don't want it to go too far, obviously.
You need it to go a couple of hundred yards.
Yeah, because what you don't want is you don't want people pulling up the road and been able to pick up the
exactly.
and watching the movie for free, you know. So you want it just to be in the proximity of the car park. So we got over that hurdle anyway, and we got sorted with that. And then it was to kind of sit down and look at what movies we could get. And I'd heard stories about how, you know, Disney and all of these companies were really, really difficult to negotiate with and deal with. But there's actually a company over here that kind of do it on your behalf.
Okay.
So you can go to them and you can say, look, this is what I want to do. I want to show this movie, this number of cars, this time, this day, and they'll actually go off and do
and they go get it for you.
Yeah, and then they'll come
back. That's brilliant.
Yeah, they'll come back and they'll say, look, it's a yay or an A in terms of the movie. But there's most of the, you know, the older ones, they will allow you to do. And we've done them all, you know, at this stage over the past 3 years.
And can you tell me, Ryan, was this like a labour of love? Did you go see a movie in an outdoor situation and went, this
Pretty
is
much.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
I've got to go. Other people have to experience
exactly.
this.
That's exactly the way it was.
Yeah.
And I thought, look, if we could get people to kind of buy into it, that we might get a year out of it with the novelty factor, you know, that and that's been honest.
I get you. And in fact, the opposite has happened. People have got it.
Yeah, and I think what's happened now, which is great for us, is that we've actually found that little niche market where it's people who might be cinema fans, but like, I always found the cinema experience very restrictive, you know. It's kind of like a library. You can't really speak, you can't do very much, it's dark, particularly for kids. Like, that's not a fun environment for kids, whereas with the drive-in, they can sit in the back of the car. You control the volume yourself, so it can be as loud or as quiet as you want.
Yeah.
You can have mom and dad sitting in the front, or you can have mom and dad sitting in the back and the kids sitting in the front.
Yeah.
They can fill the car with goodies. They can make as much noise.
They can chat away. Yeah.
They can use their phones.
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely
Clever thing. Yeah. And I heard you saying car parks. So we're not doing it in fields. We're doing it in car parks.
Yeah, no, it's...
So, and like, how do you manage the like, where to put the screen, for instance?
Yeah, I think that came with the more we did, the more comfortable we got with the whole situation. Like our first couple of events were really tester events, you know. And then you learn, like, even now you learn at every event that you do. So for example, you have to be conscious with the screen and the sun, you know, because we use LED screens, which can be used during the day, but what you don't want is you don't want a glaring sun, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is positioning there in terms of the screen that you have to take into consideration. But outside of that, you know, parking the cars, it's just like parking cars in any car park. You know, you're just pointing them directly
in the same direction. Yeah,
you know, directly in front of the screen.
And can I ask you as well? Like, I would, you know, you kind of brought up the idea of the sun. So does that mean that's like midsummer is kind of out for this?
It doesn't mean it's out, because LED screen can be used. It's not the same experience.
Yeah.
So our busy times are Halloween, Christmas.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Early in
well
the year.
Imagine,
when at 4 o'clock it's starting to get dark.
Yeah.
You know?
You can really get the full impact.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. What has the reaction been?
Oh, it's been incredible.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic, and we've been really, really lucky. We started off in Cherrywood Business Park up the road here, and they were brilliant for us at the start. That's going through a transformation now. There's a lot of building going on up there.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they sat down with us very early on and said, look, you know, you'll probably only get, you know, a year to 18 months here. But I thought that fitted in with what I thought the expectation of it was going to be. So it grew and grew, so we found a new home up in Leopardstown Racecourse.
Oh, excellent.
which is brilliant.
Yeah.
The location, I think, for us is fantastic, because it's just right off the M50. You know, it's not an obscure place. You're coming off the M50 and you're straight there. And
so
after,
you, Just doing it in the one place, are you?
Yeah, no, we're moving around. So we've been Leopardstown is kind of our home. You know, that's where we would do most of our events. But we've been to Ballybrit Galway Racecourse. We've been to Cork, Mallow. We did Riverfest in Dublin, and we did Jaws by the Sea, which
that's,
you know,
brilliant.
And then we're actually heading to Ennis for the first time now in December. So we're doing a Christmas weekend down there, and then we've got two weekends in Leopardstown. So, you know, we kind of moving around, and then this year for the first time we've moved into the indoor scene as well. So.
Yeah, I was just speaking. So how do you do that? I mean, how do you make the indoor thing work the same way?
Yeah, the indoor, it's difficult in that. First of all, I saw the Home Alone in concert last year in it was in the Royal Albert Hall, and I thought this is just unbelievable. So it's like, you know, if you think about it, it's the movie, so it's everyone's favorite Christmas movie on a huge screen.
Yeah.
They've stripped the music out of the movie, so it's just the sound, and then the orchestra recreate all the musical
yeah.
bits in it. And it's absolutely brilliant. So we had the opportunity to do it this year. So we're doing two shows in the Convention Centre in Dublin. We're doing Castlebar, the Royal Theatre, and we're doing the INEC in Killarney as well.
Amazing.
And it's a totally different, you know, you can imagine, like, if there's a 75-piece orchestra, there's a 40-piece choir. It's just going to be incredible.
So you get your movie. But when the music happens, the air really moves.
Exactly. That's exactly
it. It's fantastic. Yeah. I'm
totally immersive. You know, you're sitting there and you just don't want it to end, because the sound and just the nostalgia of it as well. Like, so it's.
I mean, you've a rake of movies. You're showing The Polar Express, Elf, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, I presume. Yeah. Love Actually, The Santa Claus. This is fantastic.
Yeah, they're all the big ones.
And the Convention Centre of Dublin. So these are all going to be. So the Christmas programme is all to do with this.
It's
to do with the full orchestra and that kind of thing. So this is pretty big. I'm so thrilled for you, man. Where do you go from here? Like,
well, I think we're growing. We're still growing. So we'll let it grow. You know, I think we'll try and introduce as many different things that we can in terms of things that are different. You know, I think that's the key to it. People want a different experience. They want something, you know, that's different to your normal cinema experience. So I can tell you, for example, that we're going to do Downton Abbey early next year, which is going to be great.
And do you think you're going to do that with orchestra as well?
I think Downton Abbey is just going to be the outdoor.
But
what we'll probably do is theme it. You know, we'll put a 1920s or 30s theme onto it as well. So look, you know, and I think that there, for us, that's the key to be imaginative and come up with things that people want. For example, what we're doing at Christmas that we did last year, which worked brilliant, is we're doing PJs and pillows driving. So basically, you pack the car with the kids, put a load of pillows in.
Yeah.
They wear their PJs. It's a novelty factor for them.
Yeah, brilliant.
They get goodies. They get hot chocolate, and you sit in the car and watch your favorite Christmas movie.
Lovely idea.
It's your own space.
Lovely idea. That's really good.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.